The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
This is Mike Consul with just a quick correction to the recording you are about to listen to. You'll hear my guest, Michael O'Brien, refer to a retail research report produced by QIC. During the program, the coordinates I provide for getting a copy of that report were incorrect. So to correct the record, you can get a copy of that report by going to the QIC.com website, then use the navigation bar to go to the Knowledge Center, and then use the sub-navigation bar to go to the Investment Insights section of the website to get a copy of that report, which is titled, Our Conviction in the Retail Recovery Post-COVID-19. Now, on with the program. This is Mike Consul. Welcome to Report from Asia. Our guest is Michael O'Brien, Managing Director of QIC Global Real Estate. We're going to talk about the land down under and what's happening in retailing in Australia. Michael O'Brien, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mike.
It's great to have you. And let me start by talking to you about what I believe is a retail recovery happening in Australia right now. And is it in recovery now, or is it expected to recover? What is the current status of retail in Australia currently vis-a-vis pre-pandemic?
Yeah, what we've seen, I mean, you know, every country's had a bit of a different journey through the pandemic, as you know, Mike. And so here we've sort of gone in and out of lockdowns depending on the city over the last, you know, 18 months. But what we saw, and we actually did a research paper on this, but what we saw in the first 6 months of this calendar year was basically the whole country was relatively free of COVID restrictions. So we kind of had a good six-month run where, you know, we were pretty much back to, you know, normal pre-pandemic operating conditions. And what we saw in that period was a very strong operating environment, really good solid sales growth coming through, particularly the larger, you know, sort of big regional, super regional assets. And, you know, that was, I think, a function of the fact that there was this sort of pent-up demand, a lot of cash in the system. You know, we've got historically incredibly low interest rates here. You know, people haven't been able to travel. We had strong sort of fiscal stimulus from the federal government providing support for people who, you know, couldn't work as a result of the pandemic. So we saw, you know, just people wanting to get out and spend. And that sort of went for 6 months. And then we went into Sydney and Melbourne, which are, you know, the two largest cities in Australia, then went into protracted lockdowns from sort of, you know, late June to the middle of October. And so we've been sort of a month or 6 weeks out from the end of those lockdowns, and we're seeing very similar trading conditions emerge. You know, again, really strong traffic numbers. You know, retailers are reporting very strong sales, and that's great. Very good timing as we head into Christmas. We've still got very supportive, you know, policy settings to encourage spending. So, you know, we think that those positive trading conditions will continue into next year as well.
So QIC did a research paper, you said. Tell us about, where's that accessible? Is it on the website?
Yes, it is. And we can certainly, you know, provide people who are interested with access to it. It's called Our Conviction in a Retail Recovery Post-COVID-19. And really just sort of talks to, you know, from a macroeconomic sort of perspective, why we think conditions are very conducive to ongoing strong consumer spending. but also goes into a bit of detail on our experience, as I mentioned, through the first 6 months of this year and what we saw. So I think it would be a very useful read for people.
So QIC.com, and then go to the Knowledge Center. Was that where it would be found?
I believe so, Mike.
And under Investment Insights, here's Red Papers. You also have Red Papers on the site.
Yes.
So
we would call it a red paper or an investment insights paper.
Okay. All right. So listeners, you heard that. QIC.com, and go to the Knowledge Center, and then under there, the Red Papers. Now, why did you do the paper to begin with? I realize you're a research organization anyway. I mean, that's all part of what you do. But the decision to do it at that time was made. Why?
Yeah, I mean, we have a very strong research function at QIC, and you know, our economics team, headed up by Matt Peter, you know, we think of, you know, very high, well-known, great capability. But I think, you know, like what we've seen over the last probably 3 or 4 years that you probably know, Mike, is that institutional interest in the retail sector has been, you know, quite soft. You know, there's been a lot of concern about the sustainability of income. You know, we obviously saw some significant value corrections as a result of the pandemic. So, you know, I think that paper was really trying to give investors an understanding of what we were seeing on the ground, because all of the sort of the noise around retail, you know, the impact of online spending, you know, concerns about the sustainability of valuations, you know, you kind of got to sort of wade through all of that and get to, you know, how are the assets actually performing? And Australia is quite unique in that, you know, we've got these very good and strong retail, big sort of regional and super regional assets that are located right in the centre of their communities. And the reason why the sector has performed, you know, extremely well over many decades is because there are significant barriers to entry. You know, the planning legislation is very supportive of the continued growth of those regional assets. The infrastructure network and transport, and you know, is very conducive to people coming in and, you know, and being around those type of assets. And then what we've done a lot of work on is the adaptability of those sites to mixed-use development, to complementary mixed uses that support the retail. And, you know, we're well on the path to undertaking those mixed-use master plans across our portfolio. So, you know, what we wanted to show people was that, you know, you put aside all of that sort of kind of noise and look at how the assets are actually performing at an operating level. You know, and I think that's, for us, it's very encouraging. We can see, you know, conditions very supportive of consumer spending, and we expect that to be ongoing. You know, the assets themselves are extremely well leased. You know, we're seeing occupancy rates of 99% and above. There's good, strong leasing demand from, you know, retailers across categories. You know, there are plenty of opportunities that we have to continue to evolve the retail mix in line with consumer preferences, repurpose, you know, unproductive space, and then supplement all of that with ongoing development around these big strategic locations with office, you know, residential, hotel, healthcare. So we can see, you know, sort of unlevered returns at sort of between 8% and 9%. Across these big assets from their existing valuations, which we think is extremely compelling when you look at, you know, total returns that are being offered in the industrial sector, for example, in office, you know, which have been you know, significantly more, you know, there's been a lot more institutional investor interest in those sectors over the last sort of couple of years. So it was really in response to that. And I think, you know, investors are starting to see that now. It's becoming clearer that these assets have very strong operating performance coming through, but also the potential of these sites. And we're starting, it's the early signs now, we're starting to see some institutional interest coming back into the sector. We've seen a couple of transactions made, you know, very recently involving big institutions at strong pricing. And I think we're at the start of a renewed interest in the sector here in Australia.
You know, occupancy rates of 99% and above. Now, you're talking to a guy in the United States where we are have been over-retailed for decades, and we got so much retail, it's absurd. It sounds like you're under-retailed over there. How could there be that much occupancy, such a high level, without people building more retail? Or is that happening? Because you got to figure people are saying, look, the getting is good here. I want to open a business, and there's no space. So what's going on there as far as that goes?
It's an incredible difference, isn't it? And yeah, the assets have run at those kind of occupancy levels historically for decades, and the productivity levels, the sales productivity, we're in the big assets that we own, we're generally at 1,000 a square foot or well above, right? So retailers, that attracts retailer interest, and so it keeps the occupancy levels up. They know that they can make money in the better sites. And we're actually attracting interest now from a broader range of categories. So, co-working, for example, and this is, I think, has been a little bit of a function of the pandemic, that sort of decentralization theme, people wanting to, work from home, but a lot of people find it difficult to work comfortably from home, but they don't want to travel into the city, right? So, co-working as an option in the suburbs, for a lot of people is very compelling. And so we're just about to open a 3,000 square metre co-working space in Eastland in Melbourne in the eastern suburbs. And we've got interest from a number of other operators in
But that's office, right?
That's office.
Are you saying that, you're talking about office there. Are you talking about kind of this dispersion of the working people and the implications for retail?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing, Mike, is that there are uses that are interested in taking space within the retail asset and also adjacent to the retail asset that that we haven't seen before, right? So that space that I mentioned at Eastland is occupying what was previously vacant space above the retail. So you access it through the retail, but it sits above the retail podium.
So it's mixed use. You're talking about mixed use projects.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And, let me ask you.
And we're seeing,
go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. But we're seeing, our department stores, our two department store operators in many of our assets are looking to give some space back because they're looking to make their footprints more productive. And so some space that they're looking to take back is not traditional retail space, but, it could be the upper level of a three-level footprint. And so we're looking at, using that type of space for things like co-working, for entertainment uses, for gymnasiums, things like that. So we're seeing, different types of operators looking to leverage off the foot traffic and the amenity that the retail provides. And it gives us more options to make, traditionally less attractive space, very, very productive. And provide spin-off benefits to the broader retail.
Now, how much government support did the Australian government offer? I ask this question because in the United States there was extended unemployment benefits, there were checks sent out. There's a lot of people flush right now, and you see what's happening here. And I'm not sure if similar in Australia. We're getting inflation. We're getting a lot of people looking. It looks like it's going to be a very good holiday season. Problem being, though, that it's hard to, because of supply chain problems, it's hard to get the stuff delivered on time and so on. Was Australia very generous? The government very generous? Is that part of kind of the dynamic going on right now that this money is now ready to be spent and that's going to boost the retail sector over what period of time? You tell me.
Yeah, I think it's part of that sort of demand that we're seeing from consumers is sort of the kind of the remnants of that that cash injection into the economy, Mike. Now there are a lot of people who qualified for those support payments that absolutely needed and have probably spent most of that money, but I think there's probably some people who are still still have the capacity to spend that. But I think more broadly, you know, the fact that we've got, you know, historically low interest rates, so the cost of money is very low. We've seen incredibly strong residential house price growth, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. And so people are feeling, you know, like they've got some, you know, their balance sheets are strong. They haven't been able to travel. You know, Australians are great, you know, overseas travellers. That's obviously very expensive. So that money hasn't been spent. And so all of these things are combining to, you know, to encourage people to get out and say, okay, well, we've, you know, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, we've gone through these 3 or 4 month lockdowns. You know, we're going to enjoy ourselves. You know, we're going to buy some really nice gifts for our family and friends. We're going to enjoy Christmas. And we feel like we've got, you know, we've earned the right to spend. And we think that's going to last a while. I mean, our Reserve Bank is saying that they're not looking to raise rates until, you know, 2023 at the earliest. Now, that may not happen. It may be earlier. But I think that's giving people encouragement that, you know, we're not going to see sort of an interest rate shock. So this is all contributing to this sense that, you know, and the demand that we're seeing, that, you know, people are very happy to spend.
Oh, people are always happy to spend. Actually, not everybody. You know, some people are just born savers. They feel terrible spending. They want to put the money in a bank. But
yes. But
most of us like to spend money. It feels good to spend money. Talk about the retail categories that you think are, that the research indicates are poised to do very well.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, I think coming out of the pandemic, you know, dining is, you know, people going out to restaurants and cafes, you know, because they've been starved of that. That's a sector that is bouncing back very strongly. I think there are, what we're seeing is that getting staff is probably an issue because, you know, young people are still working through getting fully vaccinated. So that's been a bit of a challenge for the hospitality industry. But I think that will recover very strongly. You know, I think the cinema industry that has had an incredibly difficult time globally, I think that is poised to, you know, have a good Christmas. I think we'll start to see some really good quality releases coming through. Fresh food, I think there's been a bit of a trend towards more cooking at home. That will probably continue to some degree. You know, athleisure, you know, people buying that type of kind of athletic gear that, you know, is also casual gear has been incredibly strong. I think people will spend more money on themselves, so cosmetics is likely to be good. And, you know, this is a theme that we've been seeing for some time is, you know, the experience that people want to have when they go out. They're not as interested in spending on goods as much as they historically have been. It's more about sort of services, you know, health and well-being, you know, pampering themselves, you know, investing in experiences with their families. You know, I think that will be a strong theme as well. So, you know, as you know, Mike, retail is an industry that is just constantly evolving because consumer behavior is evolving. And the great
thing, it's so dynamic.
Yeah,
it's so dynamic. It's
exactly,
you have to. You have to keep up with just consumer preferences. I think consumers, I mean, you tell me, I think consumers just get bored with the same old can of corn and they just decide, I want a different experience. So, and it seems to happen on a faster track than in the past. So if you're going to be in the retail business, it seems that you've got to be very fleet of foot or the consumer is going to leave you behind.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know, if consumers are looking to spend money in a certain, you know, sort of area where, you know, they haven't before, you know, this is the great thing about, you know, these open economies is that there are businesses that are then created to fill that void. So we've, you know, an example for us is a group called FunLab here in Australia that run, you know, entertainment venues like this. Strike is an example. It's like a bowling alley, but with bars and different types of entertainment that you can access. You know, they run a number of different brands, and you know they're looking to take additional space in our assets because people, you know, want to come to our assets and have an entertainment you know, and leisure experience. So,
more experiential. It sounds like more of a destination, more experiential. People wanting to do more than just walk out with a product or a service, but to actually have a good time doing it all and make it social at the same time. A lot of shopping has been social, but it's been, by comparison, passive. Nowadays, you hear about lifestyle malls and what you're talking about there, where very, very much experiential. What do you think for the Australian retail sector? What were the lessons that came out of the pandemic?
I think a few, Mike. I think, you know, the what we've seen in Australia, and I think what this has probably been a global trend, is that retailers, the prevailing successful retailing model is omnichannel. You know, it's not either pure play online or pure play physical. It has to be a really strong combination of both. And I think it's even more pronounced here because we have such a big geography here. You know, the distances are so broad. Our cities are relatively, not densely populated. And so the cost of logistics in, that last mile challenge is quite significant here. You know, labour costs are quite high. So, you know, our really good retailers have worked out that they need a really vibrant online model, and that's been very clear through the pandemic. And a lot of them have really built on that and established that presence very strongly. But then they have to have the physical presence. You know, it's still a lot cheaper, obviously, for people to come in and buy stock and leave with it. So that really is what we're seeing is the preferred model here. And they continue to work on their online presence and really want to be physically in the assets that will provide them with the highest levels of productivity and the greatest opportunity, to make money. Right. So they're starting to look a little bit more selectively at the locations that they go into. And that's where you have to have really high quality productive assets, because that's where they want to be. Unfortunately, that's the space that we're in. So that's a really good thing for landlords. I mean, we want to see retailers that, have a really good physical presence, and a lot of them actually want to increase their footprint. But, we want to provide them with as many things that we can do to make their online presence successful as well. So click and collect has become something that's, really become quite entrenched. A lot of retailers have different ways of managing that distribution channel. But we're starting to think much harder about how we provide our shoppers with easier access to product that they've bought online from our retailers. And that's probably something that really has struck me through the pandemic is, we have to have that, particularly through our developments, we have to have a really clearly defined model, which will, I think, continue to evolve to support our retailers in those endeavours.
Now, what about consumer taste? We were just talking about how the consumer changes quickly. I may have oversimplified that by talking about how they want it to be more experiential, especially younger people, I think, are oriented that way. But this segues nicely to what you were talking about with e-commerce. I think during the pandemic, of course, that must have given e-commerce a boost because people were kind of fixed in place, at least temporarily. And maybe some of these people have never even used e-commerce before, and now they're realizing, hey, nobody's stealing my credit card. This is really convenient. It's dropped out at my door. It's really kind of nice. So maybe I want to continue doing this. Now, is that when we talk about consumer taste changing from the e-commerce versus bricks and mortar, equation? Yeah. Do you see consumer taste changing more towards e-commerce? I understand what you're saying about the omni-channel, and retailers have certainly gotten much more savvy about, hey, we've got all these physical structures and we can do e-commerce right out of here. They have a place to pick it up, or we can deliver it, or what have you. What about consumer tastes? Let's be specific to the e-commerce versus bricks and mortar equation for starters.
Yeah, and like I guess that's the thing, Mike, is we don't see it as a competition. You know, it's like, to me, the more we can encourage online spending through retailers that have that omni-channel presence, because that's, you know, that's the best way that they can, you know, run a profitable business. I mean, that's great, right? I mean, the healthier they are, the more they sell through online channels, that helps their business. And a lot of that is going to be click and collect. And they come into the store, and that provides the retail with an opportunity to do more business. But, you know, they've realized that they have to support that that online model with a powerful physical presence. That's the most effective way of running a sustainable retail business, right? So, you know, and every category is a little bit different in that sense. So, you know, for ages, we haven't been concerned about online. We've seen it as an opportunity to strengthen our retailer partners, which will help them understand what they need from their physical space. And in most cases, when we talk to them, they want more. They want bigger sites. They want more sites in. But what's changed is they want to be in the best centres. They want to be in the centres that provide the highest opportunity to generate sales productivity. And, you know, and that's, as a landlord, that's where you have to be. So, you know, we're not concerned about the competition. We welcome it, because I think it's a really positive thing for us as, you know, physical landlords.
Now, shoppers, of course, love to spend money, but so do investors, Michael. So where should investors be spending? Where and how should investors be spending the money? Where can they best capitalize in Australia when they're making commitments to the retail sector? What advice would you give in that regard?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, from where the valuations are currently sitting, and if we're looking at the sort of the larger regional assets where our portfolio sort of concentrated, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I think the total return sort of projections are extremely compelling when screened against alternative, you know, options. So that's the first thing. And we're starting, as I mentioned, to see the early signs of renewed interest. But then what, you know, the marginal value then beyond that in terms of the development around these sites is, in most cases, is in these complementary mixed uses in office buildings, in residential towers, in hotels. And sometimes these are above the retail podium because they're obviously low rise, and so you can support, you know, buildings above the retail. But then at other times they're adjacent on land that we own and control, right? And, you know, we're getting really strong development returns out of those types of discrete, you know, kind of opportunities. But then what you also get is a kicker on the retail, because if you're putting an office building of, you know, 20,000 square metres right next to your retail asset, you've got, you know, a couple of thousand people who are going in there every day to work, and guess where they're going to spend their money? You know, in a lot of the time, they're going to spend it in the adjacent retail asset. So you kind of get this sort of double positive whammy. You get a really good development return from developing the real estate in the first place, but then you get the kicker in terms of the increased visitation on the retail. So it's a really nice story, and we've got we own these very large pieces of land in and around these big retail assets, right in the middle of these communities, often with train stations right next door. You know, important road networks, bus interchanges. It's kind of, you know, it's like for a lot of users, not just retailers, but, you know, office users, hotels, residents, you know, it just provides a very compelling, you know, amenity and opportunity for them to be there. So that's where we see the sort of the marginal deployment of capital. We don't need to make our retail assets necessarily any bigger. We need to make them more productive and repurpose spaces, etc. But that's where we would be looking to concentrate our development, around those mixed uses.
Our guest has been Michael O'Brien. He's Managing Director of QIC Global Real Estate, and he's got some shopping to do, I'm sure. So I'm not going to hold you up, Michael, because it's getting towards holiday time. I'm sure you want to get out there and stimulate the Australian economy and put a little bit more force behind that retail sector. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I just want to remind our listeners that the report that Michael referred to earlier in the podcast is on the QIC.com website. Michael, appreciate your time. Thanks for the update on Australian real estate, and glad to hear that things are looking up.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.